Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the path to self-leadership mastery and life success. Redefine how you lead as you redesign your business. I call this dual innovation leadership. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and effectively. Discover something new from our meaningful conversation today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy, and today I've got guest mentor Debbie Unterman back into the studio. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Nancy.
We're talking about her book, Talking to Myself, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head. So to give you a little bit more background about Debbie, this is our 8th podcast conversation. Woot, woot. So we've got a lot of history. We met at a mastermind event in Phoenix, Arizona in 2017, and our lives have not been the same since.
I don't think anybody's been the same since 2017.
Yeah, but I'm meaning that my life is better with you in it.
Same here, partner.
That's right. We've got a lot of history between us. We've done a lot of fun things. We started a hashtag Truth Tellers Win Facebook page, and you did live shows for 4 years on Wednesday evenings. You mentioned in our last conversation, early in your college years, you started a TV show, first nonprofit public radio show. And you raised most of the money.
That was not in my college years. That was in my post-college. I guess I graduated in 75. By 79, I was kind of lost, didn't know what I really wanted to do. I moved up to the Redwoods. I left the world. My favorite time in life had been summer camp in New Hampshire, when I went there for the summers, and I just was able to swim in the lake and clean in the cold water trough, really roughing it, really, you know, no indoor toilets in the cabins, a lot of mosquito bites, and I loved it. Girls, YMCA camp. I moved up literally into a tent when I first got up to the land I was living on that somebody invited me onto. They put up a platform and we put up a tent until it got too cold. Then we had to find another place to live after 3 months. I ended up being there for 9 years. I never wanted to leave. It was my community. I was a community builder. I wanted to get into bartering. Don't you think that would be the best means of commerce? You know, one person is a baker, another is an artist, and so you get bread from one and you get things to put on your wall from another, and it makes the world go around. I was very idealistic. I would have loved to probably live there forever, but that's where I started doing the alchemy work. The Alchemical Hypnotherapy Institute didn't even exist. It moved into my neighborhood. And wow. It found me literally through a dream. I don't know if you've ever heard this, Nancy, but that's how I got started. So I'm living up there, 79, 80, 81, 82.
In Connecticut?
No, Northern California in the Redwoods.
Yes. Okay,
you were there. I left the East Coast. Yeah, I left the East Coast and moved, left the world, you know, became a hippie. It was Garberville during the Wild West of Sensimilla growing had just begun when I got there. And it was an amazing community, just like crazy in the middle of nowhere, and all these pot farmers buying 40-acre plots that had been pretty much raped by the loggers, you know, so they were useless, so they could get them for about $1,000 an acre. So $40,000, people put their money together and bought parcels, and hippies they sprouted everywhere. You know, literally the back to the land movement, like, where have all the hippies gone? They went to Northern California, and somehow I was swept up with it.
I have a resurgence
there
now because, you know, pot's legal.
Yeah.
Becoming legal in most states. So,
it's changed everything. But that was 1979 when I got there. We were landlocked into the mountains where FM radio waves will not travel across mountains. AM will, FM won't. So we really had no radio, no, you know, and a radio station glues the community together. There was actually someone, you won't believe it, it was the sound man from the Grateful Dead. Healy was his last name, Dan Healy. And because it was his hometown, he started an FM radio station himself, which was cool. We finally had a radio. But when he got bored, he gave it up and we didn't have one again. So the community got together. We called it Redwood Community Radio. And we decided we wanted the FCC to give us a license. And it was a long process. We had to come up with call letters, which they ended up calling K-Mud. And we were the Mudders because it's the bottom of the rainforest up there in Humboldt. It rains a lot and there's a lot of mud in all those places where they took all the trees. They stripped the trees away up in the mountains and people's cars were always full of mud. And it was an interesting life.
Yeah.
So I helped start the radio station during those 9 years. And lo and behold, it just came together in 87. And because I helped to raise the money, literally, we raised the smallest amount of money that has ever started an FM radio, a public radio station. I knocked on all the doors of the one street, main street of the town, and got them all to give me $100 towards it. And I made them what I call like founding members or something, you know.
Right.
Gave them special stars next to their names. And 65 of them gave me $100. I single-handedly was able to collect $6,500. It was supposed to be a team. Well, the other guy on the team was a musician. He got six people, I think. So I got 65. He got six. So because of my work.
Natural fundraiser.
Yeah, for other people. Not necessarily for myself, but I'm great at causes. They gave me a radio show and a talk show, and there were only five talk shows, the five nights of the weeknights, and they gave me one of those. I loved it. And a year later, I was guided to leave. I'd been doing the alchemy work from 83 to 88, and I realized it was getting glutted. It was just starting. I was on the bottom floor. It just got invented in 83 when I found my teacher. Everybody who was taking it was all from California. So being somebody who really abhors competition, I wanted my own territory. I didn't want to be in competition with everybody else doing it there. I wanted to be the only one somewhere else. And at that time, my parents were moving from Long Island, which I knew I would never move back to, to Florida, right on the water. So I thought, okay, I want to be close enough to them to be able to go to their condo right on the water. It was the Gulf, but to me, it was the ocean. And so I chose Atlanta. Okay. I had a friend who graduated with doing alchemy, and she invited me to visit. And I thought, hey, I think I could live here. I packed up my car, put the moped on the bike rack and my Kunga in the front seat and filled up a car, drove to Atlanta. That was how I started with a carload.
Wow. And you just went yourself?
Yep.
Good for you. Wow. Yep. Talk about courageous.
I felt led. I've been very so the reason I started saying I had a dream that got me into it in the first place.
Yeah.
And that dream was while I was back on the East Coast visiting. I dreamed that a friend of mine from back in California, she said to me, Debbie, you know that money I owe you? Well, I invested it and you're rich. So I had to find out what she meant. I have these dreams that I know they mean something. And it was very literal. She ended up investing in my first alchemy session and she paid me back the money. She really did owe me. And it was the exact same amount. It was, my teacher at that time was willing to do, if you would drive up the mountain 45 minutes from town, he would do a session for $45. He paid
for it. I love those kinds of things. Wow. That's really, a great story. You wrote your book in 2009, Talking to Myself, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head. And I love the opening quote. It says, "The mark of greatness is being true to one's own seed and nature," by Romani Gypsies.
Yeah, it was one of those moments when you're listening to NPR and you're so engrossed. I had to pull over and keep saying that saying in my mind and write it down. As I was driving, I heard the interview with a man from, you know, Hungary or somewhere. And he said, that is what they say. And I thought, that is wisdom that I can't deny. What I like to do is bring things down to their smallest seed anyway, and to say that we have a seed inside of us and a nature that is all our own. It's not what you're told about being great. You're supposed to be famous or rich. That's what they teach you. But where does that get you when you die and go to heaven? Is that what you were supposed to be doing while you were here on earth? Getting rich and famous? I think not.
I was wondering if we could jump to the chapter 10. I think this plays into, the seed and how we end up kind of on the dark side of the moon.
Yep, the shadow side.
Yeah, and the saboteur. Saboteur, who lives in the depth of the shadow. And I would love to hear you talk about it some more, because I think that this is thing that we misunderstand about ourselves and other people.
It also has something to do with those voices in our heads that sometimes talk to us in ways that may not be for our highest good. We have those parts that we might hear inside of us, but we may reject. And so what happens a lot of times is we project them onto other people. We use the psychology term projection. And often we disown those things that we hate or dislike in ourselves. And we end up seeing them in everybody else. And look at what's happening right now in the world, the divisiveness.
Yeah.
That darkness that people are seeing in other people, calling them names and not seeing them as human, dehumanizing them.
Yeah.
That is part of our shadow side. That's not what we're here to do. And we have to come to terms that what we see out there is in us. She doth protest too much, right? She's out, down, spot. Yeah, because she knows she's got blood on her hands in Macbeth.
Right. Well, that's wonderful that you tied Macbeth in here. That's so true. One of the things that I don't know if I mentioned this in the introduction with talking to myself and learning to love the voices in my head. There's many voices that we have. We have the judge, we have the rebel, we have the victim. We might even have Ms. or Mr. Perfect. You know, we've got all these messages that we're getting from those voices in our head. And our job is to understand what they're trying to tell us.
You know, that speaking of that Ms. Perfect or Mr. Perfect, that voice alone is pretty toxic, because striving for perfection is futile, really. You're going to maybe reach a peak for a moment, and then you'll come off of that peak. And so that idea of having to be perfect that so many people really believe, and then they judge themselves for not being perfect, where no one else is judging them for that. But like bulimics who have to weigh themselves to the tenth of a pound and will beat themselves up if they gain a tenth of a pound on the scale, will start working out or purging or doing something else. All the people we know today that are cutting themselves, they're not loving themselves. They're finding imperfections with themselves. And really, you can't be perfect. Just can be yourself.
Yeah. How do you decipher between the Ms. or Mr. Perfect versus the person who's just trying to better themselves?
It's in the, to take a line from Sally Bowles, now I'm going to cabaret, the divine discontent of their soul, that they can't ever be content. So there's something toxic about that. I listen to people. I really hear what they're saying and listen for clues that tell me what they need to go into. And often it will be something like their mother having done the white glove treatment, you know, that they're little kids and they're supposed to clean the house and they work their fingers to the bones, but their mother comes in, puts on a white glove and, you know, goes like that and says, I still see dust on something, and they get in trouble. usually it goes back to somebody who programmed them that they didn't do it right.
Well, and I think that's what's so disturbing in our society right now is we can see the programming going on. The gun problem in our society, we're training children to, you know, by drills and the push for, you know, teachers to have guns. It's mind control. Arming people to arm people never dissolves conflict. It just creates and promotes more violence, fear, and mind control.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not exactly sure where you're going with the mind control, but there is enough of people not being of their own mind and just, you know, buying the party line. So I think that's kind of what you're talking
that's
about.
What I'm saying. Yeah.
But the gun issue, you don't solve a gun issue by issuing more guns. It just doesn't work. You know, my line, what I say is, when you're going to buy an expensive toy, an expensive piece of equipment, like, you know, a new computer, for me, it was cameras. I was a photographer and just craved an SLR camera. I got a Minolta when I was, I think, maybe still in high school or going into college. I slept with it. It's hard. It's not cuddly. It's not like the stuffed animals I talk about sleeping with. It was a camera, you know, metal. But I loved it. Remember when John Lennon sang "Happiness is a Warm Gun"?
I don't remember that. Wow.
Oh,
okay.
It's on the White Album. Yeah.
Okay.
Happiness is a warm gun. Bang, bang, shoot, shoot. Yeah. You know, like people who buy guns because that is what they want as their toy, they want to use it. They wouldn't spend so much money. They wouldn't, I mean, and people collect guns. So are they going to be satisfied just at a shooting range? Some people won't. Some people want to play with their toys. And what are we seeing? You know, there's the debate. Is it the video games? Well, I grew up with cowboys and Indians, and there were, you know, kids had the holsters with the toy guns.
Right.
All through the 50s
too.
And 60s. That was ubiquitous.
And 70s. Yeah.
But you didn't get real guns. Now kids are being shot because they have some kind of thing that looks like a gun. Maybe it's a BB gun. Maybe it's a phone in their hand and they're being shot because it could be a gun. And then they're making laws that say, oh, yeah, open carry. You don't need a license. You can carry it anywhere. You can go to a store and have it. So how do you know who are the good guys, who are the bad guys? Too many people are playing with their guns. They love their guns. They are not just carrying it in their purse or their glove compartment just for safety. They're carrying it because they want to use it. They're trigger happy. They have that finger that wants to shoot it. Some people, and we're letting them. And now we're telling, let's get more trigger happy people. Let's have every school have teachers. Well, in 1989, when I went to Holland, we didn't have armed guards in America at airports. But when I flew out of, it wasn't Germany, it was Holland. I had a German name. They somehow tagged me because of my name, Untermann. You know, Untermann is German. And they pulled me out of line, and there were people with guns all through the airport. It was scary. I was not used to seeing that at that time in life. But now we are getting used to seeing guns being carried. It creates fear in kids, in normal people, to see long guns, you know, soldiers or whoever walking around with dogs and guns. I was seeing that in Europe in the 80s. Because it was, you know, after World War II, things were a little up in the air and they had to worry, and they kept that from the world. We didn't have a world war in America. We were not used to that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm telling you, the brain is registering fear. These kids that have to go through these drills, these open shooter drills, whatever they call it, it is fearful. It is scary. A little before my time, they had the radioactive drills of, you know, that there was going to be a bomb, an atom bomb. And they did drills where kids had to go under their desk. I mean, can you imagine the fear? that an atom bomb's gonna drop on you. Well, now kids have fears that there's going to be a shooter in their school any moment of the day. It could be aimed at them.
Yeah,
the adrenaline, the fear that that causes, it changes the brain.
It does. And then you're having to spend your whole life, you know, sorting out that kind of trauma.
Yeah.
You know, I just think, what are we doing to these children?
And now we're back to the shadow, right? It's those other scary people out there that we have to be scared of. Maybe they have a different color skin. Maybe they, you know, like all of a sudden this last shooter, where was this shooter?
Tennessee.
Is trans. Yeah. Now, if I were to imagine, why would a trans kid start shooting up a Catholic school? I would not jump to the conclusion that it's because trans people are bad. I would jump to the same conclusion that all the kids that were bullied are the shooters now, because they're getting back. They were victimized, and now the gun gives them power. And I'd say that my own surmise is that this trans kid was bullied in that Catholic school, and religion came into it, and she, now she's becoming male, they're calling her she, was not allowed to be true to her own seed and nature.
Yeah.
And so I would think she got angry and got back at them for that in the school that she graduated from. That I'm the first person to say that, but that's my idea. It's not what they're saying is, oh, trans people are bad. See, now they're killers. Well, what about all the other killers that weren't trans? Every other killer. All
definitely
a shadow. Yeah, it's all you're good or you're bad. You can't embrace and feel the love and bring people in and try to honor them for who they are within their differences from you. You're instead taught to look at them as there's something wrong with them, but they're not looking at themselves of what do I have inside of me. They just project it outward. So that's that shadow.
Yeah, that is really a beautiful clarification. I was wondering if we could finish out our conversation with what you talk about in your book about our spiritual guides.
Oh,
and
my favorite part.
Really how to embrace them.
Yes. Published the book, or you said I wrote it in 2009. Actually, I started writing in 2004. And I was just like, I got this letter from this email from John Kelly about doing this show called Love
Bold
the Voices
Brave.
On Bold Brave TV. I also got a voicemail from Llewellyn Publishing that said, would you like to write a book? And that's how I started writing in September of 2004. I started writing because I had an acquisition editor that was, you know, my editor. And I started writing it, kept writing it. She said it was acquired by the president of Llewellyn by November of that year. I had to write the first three chapters really fast. He acquired it. Meanwhile, as I continued to write it, she quit. They never gave me another agent or editor. So I got lost in the shuffle. It took me 5 years between beginning and actually finishing writing it, and ended up self-publishing because they accepted me and then rejected me, because the whole publishing industry between 2004 and 2009 was shuffling around. And now self-publishing is very accepted. Back then, it was brand new.
Oh, right. And so it doesn't hold as much respect as it does
sometimes
now.
Yeah, it didn't. But I did get an editor because I knew it was important to pay an editor. So the one change, she didn't do very much to my writing. It was pretty much what it was.
Beautiful writer. Yeah.
Thank you. But one thing she made me do, I wanted to put the section on guides much closer. I wanted to put it right after the intellectual characters, before the child and all the feeling characters. She made me put it at the end of all of them. I had to go through the old codependent characters, the shadow, the martyr, all that. Then she let me put the guide chapters in at the end. I hope people read that far, because that was the whole reason I wrote the book. That's what alchemy is really about, is getting in touch with your lower self, your child, cleaning up all those emotions that have been distraught, you know, in growing up and need to be cleaned up. instead of just keeping them there, letting them boil like a, you know, I always want to say a double boiler, but the ones that the steam has to escape. You know, you have the little screw on top. Pressure cooker.
Oh, sure.
Remember, yeah. The old days, yeah. Probably, right?
Yeah. Okay.
We are a pressure cooker without a release valve. That's what happens inside of us. Everything is all in there. And, you know, no wonder there's shootings and other ways that people release their stuff instead in toxic ways. First, you have to do that. But once you begin on your alchemical journey and you start dealing with some of the pain, there is a guide right there to greet you. I liken it to when, and you have a child, so I hope you did this, when you teach her to swim, you have to let her doggy paddle a little bit to you. If you just hold on to her and take her around the pool, she'll never learn to swim. But if you make her be a little scared for a few minutes while she's splashing around, thinks maybe she's going to go under, but she gets those few strokes in and you grab her and say, look, you did it. Yeah. That's where our guides are. They're waiting for us to just struggle a little bit. But if we go in, if we deep dive into the pain, they're right there to be in front of us to pull us out of it. And that's the most beautiful part of alchemy, is that we get to that clear, still inner voice inside of us, of our spirit.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's one way to do it, is through alchemy. Go into your stuff. Other than that, I would call it your intuition. You know, and if you do, if you are lucky enough to meet a guide, but don't do it with a spiritual bypass. Don't do it by just having your head so up in the clouds that your feet aren't on the ground and you're just total woo-woo. That's what's wrong with woo-woo.
Yeah. I was part of a meditating group for a year before I got married. We met once a week. We had these meditations that we would go through. Some people were just wanted to stay because it feels good to be in a higher plane.
Yeah.
Some people use that to avoid going into the deeper emotional, accessing the disruptive feelings inside. They stayed above it. And you can't really integrate your life and live really a grounded life without doing the work. There's no shortcuts.
Right.
There are no, absolutely no shortcuts. It's continually doing the work and really getting present with yourself and allowing yourself these emotions to come up. That's why I love yoga so much, because it lets me bring up the emotions in a gradual place on the mat. And it's not continually overwhelming to me. It's like it helps me prepare to experience the emotions and express it. And I just feel like the light within me is just growing. But like what you're talking about, alchemical hypnotherapy really can help us process those deeper emotions that we also, you know, when we feel that deeply and that strongly, it's sometimes kind of shocking. Like, oh, like when I first experienced grief with my brother's passing, he was 37. Yeah, and I was 35. And I had never felt that deep degree of like anger. I've been hurt for sure. But the depth of the anger, yeah, I was just really shocked. Like, you know, if somebody looked at me the wrong way, man, you watch out. Like Matthew and I wanted to go on a date one time and I was just feeling this. And I'm like, we were supposed to go to some friends for dinner. And I said, you know, I just can't go. I'm just really angry and I'm afraid I'll get in the car and you say or look at me in any certain way and I'll vent all this aggression at you. And that won't feel good for either one of us. But it was the first time I found myself really talking openly about grief and what I can and can't do when I'm in this frame of mind. And it was very empowering.
And very insightful of you to know that you may have projected that anger at him when it wasn't him you were angry at. This is probably the world.
Yeah, it's really the hardest thing because it's kind of easy, you know, to dump.
Right.
To project out, right? It's just really easy, but it's like, it's a discipline that's worth learning.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to say about yoga, it is, an Indian term. It's come from the East, and it means union. And that is, thank God, because the West and the East really both have things to bring to the world. But we've been very Westernized, and yoga has been what has been finally accepted as mainstream over, you know, you've been in it probably just the last, 5 years, 10 years?
Oh, I've been doing yoga since my 30s, late 30s.
But the way that the world, that this country has embraced it.
Oh, for sure. It's been at least a decade that it's really.
Okay. But that is new. And thank God it has infiltrated in a gentle way, because like you say, it puts you in touch with your inner being.
I just wanted to clear up a myth that yoga has nothing to do or is never in conflict with any religious faith. It actually helps you become better at whatever faith you've professed that you're in, because it brings you closer to yourself and your understanding. Yes. Yeah.
It relaxes you too. You know?
Oh my gosh.
People are overworked.
And keeps you more mobile. I just continue to use yoga and meditation throughout the day. It's just part of my life now. It's how I breathe.
That's great.
And I think it's just really wonderful. But I would really like to reinforce what you're doing in the world, your alchemical hypnotherapy. I think everybody should get your book, Talking to Myself, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head. I just really think it'll help you kind of clarify your own journey. And you can always connect with Debbie at Debbie Unterman, DebbieUnterman.com.
I was just going to say, I must say, it really is a good book. I mean,
really, you read it back, right?
Yes. I was just looking through it the other day, and you start with something and you can't stop because there's so much wisdom in it and it's holding up. There are some things that I wrote in 2009, like I have Bill Cosby as representative of the good inner child. Okay, that has changed. You know, if I was going to edit
that,
some things that need a little editing. But basically, the premise, I called it my life's work. I had to get it in writing.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Things haven't changed that much. I could add brain science, because in 2009, that was just before all the neuroscience. But that would be, you know, it still stands.
Oh, it totally stands. And you can read a book on, you know, the neurological advancements with this as a foundation. I just think it's brilliant.
Right.
You're brilliant. I love how you write. I love that you've got years worth of programming that everyone can tune in on Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll look forward to my Thursdays now and tuning into you. So thanks
love
for being
the voices.
Such a, on Bold Brave TV. Thanks, Debbie. You've been so fantastic.
And I love hearing your voice again and being talking with you again.
Even my other voices that come up.
Yeah, all of them. Even our conversation that we had that was fantastic that disappeared into the ethers.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's all good.
Yeah.
We're both learning from each other all the time.
We can talk, let me tell you, we can talk.
All right, and thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you all next week.
Do you want to expand your leadership skills and become more resilient and competent as a business owner? Do you want to bring more meaning to your relationships and more purpose to your business? Are you ready to take charge of how you innovate, create, and run your business? Our dual innovation leadership process will help you redefine how you lead as you redesign your business. We collaborate with you to do what will work for you as you evolve and change. We start with where you are, whether you are turning around a financial crisis, growing to the next level, or somewhere in between. We address your immediate needs, shore up business development gaps, expand relational literacy, and build upon your entrepreneurial leadership skill sets with a short-term results orientation and a long-term perspective. Start by subscribing to this podcast at wementor.com or anywhere you listen to your podcasts. If you are ready to hire a mentor, contact me at nancy@wementor.com. When we mentor, you create better life and a more fulfilling future. As an entrepreneurial leader / innovator, as a competent business owner / practitioner, as a mentor / role model, and as a human being courageously living a meaningful life. As Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world. Get involved today. It's never too late to change your life and how you lead.